Welcome everybody to our second webinar, Freedom Webinar. I'll just put you through to Neil Duns to explain the background situation.
Hi guys, thanks Jeremy. Welcome to the second Freedom Webinar from behind the scenes. I'm Neil, I'll be moderating today's webinar. Alongside me is James doing the switching and Genevieve helping out with the questions and Tiger on camera as well. Today's webinar is an interactive presentation, so any questions you have, please feed them in throughout the webinar. So that's all from back here. I won't hold you up any further, and I'll switch you back to Jeremy.
I'll just wait a second, Neil. Just for a second, I just would like to mention that that behind the scene cameras, you can see this wonderful room, which my brother Simon Griffith and another WTM founding member, Simon McIntosh, built with everyone else's help. And also James Press, who's there beside Neil, is the genius who mastered and put together all this amazing technology for filming and the audio recording and also for the webinar. So you can see from behind that picture there that just what a wonderful setup we've got here. And I don't know, I should say that the WTM founding members are a 50 strong team, and they produced Freedom, my book. I'm a biologist, Jeremy Griffith, and they earn all the funds needed to run the WTM, do everything. Because once again, as I mentioned in the first video webinar, the human condition is such a forbidden subject that we've had to be totally self-sufficient. Is that cartoon that of Michael Lunig's, James, if you could, you've got this individual in a self-sufficient, self-powered bike riding off to the left to go off into this the darkness of all the hidden truths to find understanding of the human condition. So that sort of recognises that it's a lonely trip that's required, that's not part of that whole mainstream mechanistic world. So this webinar is time for the Africa European side of the world, so that people from there can participate. Last week it was from the Americas, and I should say that it's important that everyone participating in webinars have watched the first webinar, because I introduced the basic framework of understanding that I use to explain all aspects of human behaviour. As Neil mentioned, this webinar is focused on the process of resignation that was explained, that was introduced in the first webinar, which adolescents go through, and also on how these understandings transform the human race, which should be very exciting, because Annie and others will be talking with someone from Sweden about that whole journey. But before doing that, out of Plato's cave talk, which is always very enjoyable, I want to reluctantly go back into Plato's cave, as it were, of denial, and look at some of the human condition avoiding mechanistic accounts of human behaviour. Before doing that, I'll take a question from Glenn from the Central Coast of New South Wales. He has a pre-recorded question for this webinar because he's unable to attend. And everyone should be aware that if you look at on our website, it explains that you can pre-record your questions if you're unable to attend a webinar or if they're outside hours that don't suit you. So I'll just begin with Glenn's question.
Hi Jeremy, my name is Glenn, I'm from the Central Coast of New South Wales. The question I have today is something about the process of the emotions and the feelings and the thoughts and kind of what's going on, a bit more about the nitty-gritty. So we've got the consciousness, that higher developed brain, which is kind of perception, intellect, understanding. It informs and instructs the reptilian brain, the lower part of our brain, of our body, in terms of the feelings and the emotions and just it responds. I've been able to sort of just hack into that by doing this kind of mind-body training, this mindfulness. I call it physical mindfulness because it's kind of similar to the Buddhist mindfulness thing, but I see it as actually deeper. I just wanted to know what you think about that, Jeremy. What, you know, if that's what you've observed. Yeah, I can't attend the seminar live this afternoon, so this is pre-recorded. So yeah, thanks a lot. I'll watch it later. Bye.
Thanks, Glenn, for that question. There is this split in our nature between the. I might put up this picture of the triune brain, which describes these parts of ourselves, our mind. So we've got the neocortex, the new brain at the top, the understanding brain, and we've got the limbic brain, the emotions, feelings, relationships. This is from the internet, this picture. Relationships, nurturing, images and dreams to do with play. This is this inner brain. And then the reptilian brain, which is to be the most primitive brain, to the survival, breathing, swallowing, startle responses. So there's these sort of three brains, this triune or three parts to our brain. And I'll talk more about them in a moment, but just in terms of what Glenn's asked, I do think, Glenn, that the whole human race is now in a sort of constant state of trauma where our sort of primal reptilian brain, our fight or flight response, is permanently triggered. And I know that the techniques you referred to called mindfulness is very popular at the moment, where you focus your awareness on the present moment while sort of calmly acknowledging and accepting your feelings, thoughts, and body sensations. So instead of unconsciously reacting to the human condition like a child might, you try to be conscious, be like a conscious adult about it. You try to learn to mindfully parent the trauma, as it were. So while I know it's a marvelous tool for calming the human condition, I do have to say that I think it's really about being mindless, not mindful, because in the sense that you're still escaping or disengaging from the issue of the human condition, you're avoiding dealing with it. As I said in the first webinar, ultimately we humans, we needed brain food, not brain anesthetics. There's been thousands of years of techniques like meditation and prayer and chanting and for calming the troubled mind, but and soul of humans, but they don't address and solve the agony of the human condition. So being able to understand the human condition is what really allows humans to accept and be non-judgmental about their pain, and truly be calmly mindful, aware about their life. So Glenn, I hope that in some way helps give you my response to what you've just said. Now, while we've got this triune brain picture here, I would like to talk a bit about it. This is from Freedom Expanded, a printout of Freedom Expanded, which I often refer to. If you want to read more about a certain subject, you can go to Freedom Expanded. And I think in paragraph 245 of Freedom, you know, I did make a reference to what I'm now going to talk about. And this is a really interesting idea that I want to talk about, tell you this very interesting story. In the 1950s, the American neurologist Paul McLean developed his theory of the triune or three-part brain. Now, he wrote that these three evolutionary formations might be imagined as three interconnected biological computers, with each having its own special intelligence, its own subjectivity, its own sense of time and space. So basically, McLean has recognized that these parts of our brain are independent. They sort of act independent of each other. So up to a point, he has recognized the disconnection between the limbic system, our instinctive self or soul, and the neocortex, our conscious mind, that I'm saying caused the human condition. And I know people have said to me that McLean has already put forward my explanation of the human condition, but he hasn't really. What he does say is very helpful. So this is this bit that I wanted to talk about. That's quite interesting and revealing. What happened is that this is from his book. What happened is that the description of what happened. McLean became fascinated with the limbic storms. That's the storms from our limbic part of our brain, from our soul, our instinctive self, suffered by patients with temporal lobe epilepsy. So they had a breakdown in their brain. During seizures, he recalls, they'd have this eureka feeling, feelings of revelation that this is the truth. He wrote that all on its own, without the reality check of the neocortex, the association cortex, the limbic system seems to produce sensations of déjà vu, sudden memories, waking dreams, messages from God, even religious conversions. Feelings of eternal harmony, immense joy, paradisical happiness, what it was like to be in heaven, feelings of enhanced awareness or the feeling of clairvoyance, of having clear, bright thoughts that seem as if this is what the world is all about. This is the absolute truth. So what is incredible is I talked to you I've talked about in the first webinar about the shattered defense where people the upset gets so great that their alienation gets broken down and bits of truth bubble through that our defenses, our denials, so what you've got here is something even better than that we so people with brain seizures get this totally clean access to our all loving and sort of all sensitive instinctive soul, and they have all this. So all those responses that he documented, sudden memories, waking dreams, messages from God, if God is the integrative ideal state, as I mentioned last webinar, even religious feelings of eternal harmony, this cooperative state we once lived in, immense joy, paradisical happiness, what it's like to be in heaven, feelings of enchanted awareness, or the feeling of clairvoyance, clear, bright thoughts. There's all perfect descriptions of what it was like before the conscious mind emerged and became at odds with our instinctive self, our instinctive self or limbic brain, and shut it down or repressed it, which I'll talk a bit more about shortly. But so these people that he was watching revealed this magic potential that we've killed off, this radiant part of ourself. Because of its unjust condemnation of our conscious mind, which is searching for understanding. So that was a tragic price to pay. We lost all those amazing capacities, abilities. Now, what is very significant in terms of mechanistic science, what McLean did next in his thinking what he did was to complain that, this is a quote, the limbic system has a loose grip on reality. He said, what bugs me most about the limbic brain, this is our instinctive soul, that it provides us with the feelings of what is real, true, and important. So we've once lived in this cooperative, loving, harmonious, integrative state. which is very powerful, and it has this expectation of us to behave in this loving, cooperative way. So he says, what disturbs me? Because this inarticulate brain sits in like a jury and tells the neocortex, you can't believe this. It's not a good idea. Basically, it criticizes us. Adding, don't fall for the soul trap of the middle brain. You shouldn't leave your higher brain out of value judgment process. So basically, McLean's observations of people with temporal lobe epilepsy, he recognized that we have an extremely idealistic, all-loving, pre-conscious limbic part of our brain. But he tried to cope with that by dismissing it, saying it is a loose grip on reality, and warned us not to fall for the soul trap of the middle brain. Basically, that it's a totally unrealistic part of ourselves and we should just ignore it. What happened is he sort of stumbled onto the truth of our loving soul and then ran away from it as fast as he could from its sort of confronting implications by just saying, just ignore it, you know, it's unrealistic. He didn't stay with the problem and figure out why this different limbic brain was unrealistic. And of course, beyond that, why the limbic brain was so loving, and how did we get such a moral, loving, instinctive conscious in the first place? No, he recognized the brain, these parts of our brain were acting independently of each other, which was a very insightful realization. So he got close to the truth, but then he sort of veered away from it. So he's watching these people suffering from temporal lobe epilepsy, and he's discovering they have these amazing capacities, and then implications, which is just don't deal with it. It's just unrealistic. And it is. The world has become massively angry, egocentric, and alienated. So this all-loving soul within us is totally bewildered and offended by this, which is why this conflict between these two selves emerged while we repress the soul. But he's just not going to go. He just says, just forget it. He's not going to wrestle with it. I mean, what's so important is that in my case, I didn't stumble on the truth of our moral soul. Rather, you know, I could always see it being sort of unresigned and innocent and sound and secure enough to recognize and look at and think about the situation of these two selves within us, the instinctive moral part of ourselves and our newer conscious self. And then from there, work out why there was this conflict between the two. So that's the difference. I was able to engage with the issue of the human condition, whereas McLean sort of accidentally happened upon it and then wasn't prepared to engage with it, just to dismiss it. People have said my explanation of the human condition is not original, but that Paul McLean and others have already explained it, but they haven't. I mean, Moses's 3,500-year-old story of the Garden of Eden, as I mentioned in the first webinar, described the elements involved in producing the human condition, which was that, you know, the Garden of Eden of original innocent state, and then we took the fruit from the tree of knowledge, became conscious, recognized those conflicting elements. Moses could certainly have been sound enough to sort of to wrestle with that and explain it had there been science that explained the difference, the nature of these two learning systems, the gene-based and nerve-based learning systems I explained in the first webinar. McLean had the benefit of science, unlike Moses, but he wasn't sound and secure enough to confront the human condition and solve it. As I mentioned, there's a reference in paragraph 245 of Freedom, and also there is in Freedom Expanded here, in the section titled The History of the Search for Understanding of the Human Condition, about thinkers like Paul McLean, who went close to the explanation of the human condition, then fearfully veered away from it and didn't get to the bottom of it. So I might just describe a few more of such thinkers that veered away, that got close and then veered away. These are all evidence of just how fearful and difficult the human condition has been to engage with and solve. I mean, in the 1930s, philosopher George Gurdjieff recognize the three separate parts of the brain, one for the spirit, which is the intellect, one for the soul, the emotional instinctive self, and one for the body, the primitive foundation part of our brain. But he didn't look into the nature of the differences in those effects. In his 1949 book, The Origins and History of Consciousness, psychologist Eric Newman did recognize there was a conflict between our old and new brain, writing that whereas originally the opposites could function side by side without undue strain and without excluding one another, now with the development and elaboration of the opposites between conscious and unconscious, instinct and intellect, they fly apart. Ego and consciousness identify themselves in principle one side and leave the other in the unconscious, either preventing it from coming up at all, i.e. consciously suppressing or repressing it. Only deep psychological analysis can then discover the unconscious counterposition. So he's recognized that there was a conflict and they flew apart, and the conscious self repressed this unconscious instinctive part of ourselves. The ego and conscious identify themselves in principle with one side, which is and leave the other, which is our unconscious limbic part of our brain, repressed. But the question is screaming to be addressed and asked is why exactly does the conscious mind repress the soul? Because that's what my book explains. So Newman and others like him, such as Carl Jung, Ken Wilber and Carl Sagan, recognize the involvement of the elements of instinct and intellect in our unique conscious situation, but they didn't get to the bottom of the problem, explain why a conflict occurred between the two parts of our brain. Evidence that these other thinkers were also afraid of the human condition is that they, like MacLean, dismissed the significance of our moral soul. Now, while MacLean dismissed it by saying it's simply unrealistic, so ignore it, Newman and company dismissed it more determinedly by saying the idea of the cooperative, harmonious, peaceful, loving state in our species past is nothing more than which our limbic brain is the memory of, has memory of, instinctive self has memory of, is nothing more than a nostalgia for the security of infancy. As Newman wrote, the dawn state of perfect contentment was never an historical state. It didn't actually exist. It's just nostalgia for the maternal womb. So, and I do mention this theory of that it's nothing more, that our soul is nothing more than this loving cooperative part of itself, is nothing more nostalgia for the security of infancy, in paragraph 184 of Freedom. So these other thinkers weren't even going to accept that humans did once live in a cooperative, loving, Edenic state, which our moral instinctive self is the memory of. Here's another one. In his 1975 book, The Origin of Consciousness and the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind, Jules Janes did recognize that there was a time when modern consciousness, these are quotes, did not exist and humans were purely intuitive, and that later the logical conscious brain usurped management from and killed the old pre-logical, radiantly innocent, God-run, intuitive, instinctive brain. So he's done pretty well. He's got pretty close to the truth there. But his explanation for why this happened was that the two hemispheres of our neocortex that actually represent these two states, the logical thinking left side of our brain and our more intuitive and imaginative right side of our brain, simply switched dominance. But again, that doesn't explain why there was this repression of our instinctive, intuitive, loving soul, why this psychotic state of the human condition emerged. I should mention that this explanation, the real explanation of why there is this left and right hemisphere switch dominance, is explained in paragraph 682 of Freedom. Basically that one is logical and sequential, and if you get onto a logical train of thought, then if it's safe, not going to lead you into confrontation with the human condition, then you freely can pursue that. Whereas imaginative, freewheeling, lateral thinking can be very dangerous, because if you start going off on acute angles and bringing lateral ideas, you're very prone to encounter the human condition. I mean, children notoriously have wonderful imaginations, and it dies off in adolescence, obviously, when they resign, and they're then deeply afraid of the human condition, so they lose that imaginative versatility, and they learn to just focus on narrow sort of one-track thinking because it's safe, and not go off on the side and encounter problems that are depressing and then confront you with the human condition. You can, as I said, you can read about that in paragraph 682 of Freedom. So again, the other thinkers who have recognised the elements of instinct and intellect as being involved in the human condition, but who have not got to the bottom of them, you can read about that in Freedom Expanded, this book here. But I just thought that would just help flesh out a little bit for you, a bit more of the how fearful the issue of the human condition has been, because these are thinkers that actually got very close to it and then veered away. Most determinedly. So that's, as you read into Freedom, you'll see and get to appreciate more and more just how afraid we have been of the human condition and how it's affected all our behaviour. This dark corner that we don't want to go near, and we spend every moment of our lives making sure we avoid. And so we're on this mission of escapism, of self-distraction, and finding relief from that criticism, the implied criticism from our instinctive self, our limbic brain, through winning power, fame, fortune and glory, and building bigger houses and so forth. And we're sort of in this massive materialistic escape, and there's this adventure, and there's this sort of romance, these few little positives we could get out of this post-resigned life, where we'd given up looking at the truth about the dark side of ourselves, wouldn't go into that dark corner. You could see some people that sort of wandered, got close to that and then veered away. But the very interesting one for me is McLean's, what he learned from watching people with physical ailments in their brain, and how it let out all this soul was come bursting out, all this amazing sensitivity and awareness of this integrative state. Just a marvellous evidence of the magic time we lived in this all-loving state prior to the emergence of the consciousness, and with it, the upset state of the human condition. I thought the next we might next so that's the bit of background I wanted to do about mechanistic science, and to give us a bit more of an insight. I mean, and that requires going back into the cave and dealing with all the dishonesty that's in there. I'd much rather stay outside the cave. And as this understanding catches on, people will be really reluctant to have anything to do with that old life in the cave. As I said last webinar, you know, they people playing those old power, fame and fortune, glory, and not transcended from that and left that behind, haven't left that behind, will be caught like people wearing last year's fashions. People won't want to even go back if they left their hat in the cave, where they won't even want to go back and get their hat. They just want to go near there. And a great deal of freedom, you'll see, is just paragraph after paragraph of having to deal with all the dishonest excuses that we've come up with, that science has come up with, and demolish them one after the other. So it's an exhausting demolition of all those lies, because it's humans just notoriously, as Plato predicted, would much prefer their old dishonest excuses in the cave than the new truthful one. And we'll retreat back into that. So the only way I can try to is to systematically demolish all those arguments, which is what a lot of freedom is dedicated to doing. And I now want to introduce this person from Sweden who wants to talk about his journey with this information and how resignation, the whole concept of resignation, helped him enormously in accessing the possibility of the transformed state. It'll be about resignation. But just to finish on another example of mechanistic science and the tragedy of it. I mean, it was necessary. Whilst we couldn't defend ourselves, we couldn't afford to face the truth that we did have a loving soul and that we're all corrupted and we had to use all this denial. But this is the latest Scientific American, June 2015. And this is the cover of it. And it says, the amazing teen brain, rapidly changing wiring leads to the mental agility and the risky behavior. I mean, there's so much. So it's got all this discussion of this new theory, the teen brain. And so I've read it through, but the article attributes the psychological angst and depression, you know, of adolescence, which the levels of today are just unbearable and overwhelming. And so science is being forced to try to address this issue of adolescent teenage depression, because it's now, I'll talk more about that in a minute, but is now astronomical. So they've got this article in the lead scientific journal in the world, supposedly about the teen brain, right? So what is it they've done? Okay, I'll give you a snapshot of what they've said. So the article attributes the psychological angst and depression of adolescents to the physical changes in the brain. It argues that while the sort of the limbic system, the middle brain, which drives emotion, matures during puberty, the prefrontal cortex, the macro part of our brain, which keeps a lid on impulsive actions, doesn't approach full development until decades later. So it doesn't properly contain the adolescent's limbic emotions, thus supposedly explaining adolescent's mental illness, including anxiety disorders, bipolar disorder, depression, eating disorders, psychosis, and substance abuse. So the human condition, avoiding mechanistic science, is now accepting that adolescent's mind is not able to be shut down. In other words, it hasn't resigned in that, what this new understanding enables us to acknowledge. But instead of recognizing the psychological agony the adolescence is in, it evasively, mechanistically just says the conscious mind is not developed enough yet. I mean, yes, the conscious mind does struggle to deal with the limbic soul's agony about the human condition, but it's not because it's not developed enough. It's because during resignation, the adolescent hasn't yet decided to resign to a life of consciously blocking out the limbic soul. It's still, it hasn't adopted resignation. It's not because again, we can see how mechanistic science struggles to appear accountable, as with all those recognitions of the two elements involved in the human condition of instinct and intellect. The answer is being approached, then veered away from. So the game for mechanistic science, human condition avoiding mechanistic, is to somehow create the appearance of having solved the problem, which is really hard to do. I mean, when we get beyond the human condition, and look back in hindsight, we'll see that how much intellect and effort was put into trying to maintain the denials, how this block out, you know. It's been amazing how much IQ and intelligence and application went in to try to find an excuse, a way to dodge confrontation with the human condition. I mean, my thinking is really simple and obvious. Thinking outside the cave, their thinking from in the cave to try to maintain is an incredible art. It took incredible smarts to it, which is why when you go to university, mechanistic academia, you know, you've got to pass all these IQ tests to get into university, and because you've got to demonstrate a certain skill with adroit thinking. I mean, I swear a bit and use the word bullshit, you know, but And that's only because of bullshit, because we don't actually have a word. The mechanistic world, cave world, doesn't have a word for all the denial that's going on, apart from bullshit or bull or crap or whatever. You know, there's only a swear word that we can draw on, which is another demonstration of just how committed the human race has been to avoiding this horrific issue of the human condition. See, locked in this paradox where to free itself from the human condition, you had to confront the human condition, ultimately, make use of all the clues that the mechanistic science has found about the mechanism of our world. Then you can freely look at the human condition. But how are you going to confront the human condition when you can't confront it? They're locked in this bind, and that's been the great tragedy. That's very adroit thinking, very clever thinking. It gives the appearance of recognizing that they're in trouble, and that they've got this emotional self, and then it comes up with this idea that, oh well, it's because the conscious mind hasn't become fully developed yet. And the whole obvious psychology, I mean, you only sit down with a resigning human and talk to them sincerely like Robert Coles did, and you know exactly what's going on. They're in psychological turmoil. It's not some mechanistic brain, conscious brain is not able to control the emotions. It's not developed enough yet. So there's another demonstration of the frustrations of having to live in the cave. So now I wanted to talk about, introduce this person from Sweden who's a member of the WTM and has submitted reports. We encourage members to submit reports because that gives us a good idea of how people are progressing and puts us in the best position to try to help them. As you'll meet him in a moment on webcam, his name's Olaf. He's from Sweden, and he sent in. I'll only read part of it. I'm going to bring on Annie in a minute to deal with this because she can really help. But I'll just read a little bit of it. This is from his latest member's report. I feel a great joy in being able to bottom out on resignation because it really seems like the knowledge that turns everything around. Resignation is a fantastic truth that in order to be validated required explaining the human condition, and which then underlies and underpins the proof of our goodness. So we should accept ourselves as resigned, and in fact, the fact that we can accept ourselves as resigned instead of destructive is the whole thing, I think, that we're good and not bad. That we had to resign because we couldn't understand that we were good. How could we possibly admit we were schizophrenic, had this split nature without the defense of the human condition? And he ends his report with this comment, that which replaces schizophrenia is acceptance of resignation and staying true to that. Jeremy writes in Freedom, indeed, the truth that all humans who are resigned are alienated or split off from their soul. They are all schizophrenic. They all have a split soul or broken heart, which is what the origin of the word schizophrenia. And we can be free from acting out of that now. So resignation is, we'll let Annie talk to and maybe some other members of the WTM talk to Olaf about it. His journey with this in a moment, but just to put some context to this fundamental idea that because our marvelous, all-loving and all-sensitive instinctive self condemned our conscious mind's corrupting search for knowledge, we had to block out our soul, block out this magic part of ourselves. There's, you know, that marvelous resignation poem talked about in. So when you resign, these resignation poems, we've got lots of them. You will never have a home again. You'll forget the bonds of family, and family will become just family. Smiles will never bloom from your heart again. Be fake, and you will speak fake words to fake people from a fake soul. What you do today will do tomorrow, and what you do tomorrow you will do for the rest of your life. From now on, pressure, stress, pain and past can never be forgotten. You have no heart or soul, and there's no good memories. Your mind and thoughts rule your body. That will hold all things inside, bottled up, impossible now to be released. You are fake. You will be fake. You will be a supreme actor of happiness, but never happy. Time, joy, freedom will hardly come your way and never last, as you well know. Others live in the dreams of things that you can never have or be part of, will keep you alive. You will become like the rest of the world, divine actor, trying to hide and suppress your fate, pretending it doesn't exist. There is only one way to escape society in the world you help build, but that is impossible, for no one can ever become a baby again, retrieve their innocent soul. Instead, you spend the rest of your life trying to find meaning of life and confused and in a maze. And so that's the price of resigning, which is enormous, but it was infinitely better than trying to live with suicidal depression. As the Robert Coles extract described in the mentioned in the previous webinar. Now, so we repressed our soul and we're left in a meaningless world, meaninglessness, and that's where the human race is now. Why we get very lost and depressed. So, James, could we put up the valleys picture? Right. So this is a little drawing I did of humanity's journey from ignorance to enlightenment. So it shows humans in this magic childhood in Africa, all happy and loving and cooperative. And then we had to march into hell for heavenly cause. We had to begin the journey to find knowledge, and that was corrupting, and so we lost this state of innocence. Some 2 million years ago, in this case of a species, in the case of humans today, 12 years old, you face this shock of change into having become resigned. At 1.5 million years ago, it sort of begins. You will see it in chapter 8 of Freedom. This is all described, this amazing journey. The first time ever it's been truthfully described, or 15 years old when you resign, then you go into this adolescent state, a dying world of ever increasing and accumulating anger, egocentricity and alienation. And now finally to the breakthrough of finding this redeeming understanding, and we mature from insecure adolescence to secure adulthood and this wonderful freedom. So we go from this a journey. Now, what I want to particularly look at here is this first hill, this first ridge we had to climb up, this mountain, from this childhood to resignation. And you see this glum person having to climb this mountain and then sitting at the top facing this horrific destiny that was just described in that resignation poem, having to kill off becoming a fake person. And which we couldn't face this truth while we couldn't explain it, but now we can explain it as being a heroic, not a bad state. So we can admit this amazing journey. But what I wanted to do is just talk, as I said, talk about this why we repressed our soul, this magic part of ourselves, this memory of this loving, cooperative state in the Garden of Eden, in this cooperative in Africa. And to do that, I wanted to tell you this story. The Hottentot people are supposed to be the origin of Hottentots, peoples closely related to the Bushmen in Southern Africa. And they have this story called The White Bird of Truth. And it's an amazing story. I should have put it in Freedom, but Freedom's already getting very long, so I didn't put it in. But it's obviously in Freedom Expanded. But It's just an incredible story that describes this part of the journey from this leaving our childhood and the horror of having to do that and resign. It's a famous parable. Sir Lawrence Vanderpost, who's a great inspiration for me from all my work, has written about it in his 1994 anthology Featherfall, and it's named after this parable, Featherfall. Anyway, the story starts with a hunter seeing in a pool of water the reflection of a great white bird, which he is described as the white bird of truth, so which we can now understand is the liberating truth about the human condition. After seeing this wondrous image of the white bird of truth, the hunter sets out on a heroic journey to find it, leaving behind his friends and village, in effect leaving behind his innocent childhood, to begin his ascent of this great mountain at the top of which lives the great white bird of truth. So as the hunter begins his lonely climb, he can still hear the distant, happy, joyous laughter of those he's left behind, implying that that as a result of his journey, he has to suffer becoming corrupted, alienated from his original happy social instinctive world. As he ascends this mountain in search of knowledge, the bird of truth, gremlins begin to appear amongst the rocks, taunting him by saying, "You have become such an egocentric, angry, evil person. Why don't you give up?" Words to that effect. And his doubts grow, but still he struggles on. Eventually, as the mountainside becomes steeper, the hunter starts finding steps that have been carved in the rock face by others who have gone before him. He makes use of these steps, but when they eventually run out, he still doesn't give up. Instead, he carves further steps. But as the years go by, his energy wanes. Eventually, in his old age, he can go no further and lies down to die. But just as he is about to die, a white feather flutters down and comes to rest on his forehead, symbolizing that the hunter has found some truth and added to the accumulation of knowledge that would one day lead to the finding of the truth, the full truth about the human condition, as it now has done, in which the great white bird of truth that resides at the summit of all human endeavor, and which is now, after all these efforts, you know, last, as I said, last been found. So it's incredible, the truthful story. This person leaves this happiness and laughter, and he can still hear it in the valley that he's leaving, and he climbs alone up this mountain. And I mean, it's just the most powerful story of human life as exists, based on recognizing these truths that my book's based on, that we did have a lovely cooperative soul and we had to leave it, and through when we became conscious and searched for the bird of truth, this white, and that every human has ever lived has participated heroically in that journey, cut a step, added to the journey, then had to lie down and die, and the next generation take it up. It's just the most amazing story. And I think, yeah, Olive Schreiner's got a version of it, description of it in her book, The Story of an African Farm. I mentioned Olive Schreiner's book in the first webinar. What I want you to immerse yourself in is, so he's climbing this mountain and he's becoming suffering, upset. He's marching to hell for a heavenly cause. He's becoming more and more corrupted. So you can understand that having to look back at his childhood and magic childhood and hear all the laughter and happiness that's going on there would have been unbearable. How could he keep going and retain that memory while he can't explain why he's become so corrupted and narrow focused and alienated and false and fake, as that resignation poem said? You know, obviously it's an unbearable truth, which is why McLean, you know, veered away. He says, you know, so these epileptics are letting out all this truth about this magic state, and we don't want to know about it. That's just unrealistic. Forget it. Don't go near it. And the others, Newman and co, they just, Jules James and so forth, they just couldn't cope at all. I said, it doesn't even exist. It's just, they come up with this brilliant idea. Oh, it's just nostalgia for the womb, for infancy. It has no real basis at all. But that's understandable when we immerse ourselves in how lonely our life has become under searching for knowledge and paying this horrific price of becoming angry, eccentric, and alienated, and unable to explain. You know, we couldn't dare why we became like that. And so memory of a loss, I mean, we call children kids, you know, we call them kids. It's almost a put down of children. It's sort of because their innocence kind of condemning us. So it's a put down word. It's not, we don't call them children, we call them kids. And we love them because we love to share their access to soul. But on the other hand, soul is always two-edged. It's the most wonderful place to be, but it's also condemning. So it's very hurtful. And so I just wanted to just immerse ourselves in why we had to repress our soul, because it was an unbearable truth to live with. And we had to become fake and phony and bury it and deny it and find every which way of an idea to sort of avoid it. It makes sense now. We can come out of the cave and think truthfully about life in the cave and what it was like and why we had to live there. And which is what Olaf has talked about in his, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, in his members' report, how resignation helped him bottom out on our dishonesty and how that allowed him to, from there, I mean, what did Artie Lang say? There's 50 foot of solid concrete between us and our soul. 50 foot of solid concrete. We have absconded, sure as we have, but that's why there's 50 foot, because that stops us from facing this unbearable truth about it, that our lost innocence and so on. So Olaf has gained great help from being able to bottom out on resignation and what happened at resignation, and that's provided the foothold for him to start to engage with this whole transformation potential that's marvelous. So what I wanted to do at this point is have Annie come up and talk to Olive and Annie maybe get some help from some others of the WTM founding members. Living together as partners for over 30 years obviously represents a lot of experience with my understandings of the human condition, but Annie's journey to the transformed state is her own. I mean, I wasn't living in the cave, so I can't relate well enough to people who are having to come out of the cave, if you like. So, and Annie was the first to achieve the transformed state and from the human condition, and she still leads the transformed life force way of living. So what I'd like to do now is bring Frangipani Annie up here to talk with Olaf and about his journey, and I think it'll be very interesting, and she'll do a much better job than I could.
Hi, Olaf.
Hi, Annie.
It is just so wonderful that you can join us today, and it really is special for us all to be able to meet you. I've been following your journey through your member responses on the website, and I've just been so impressed with your ability to sort of just sit down with the information and follow it through to its sort of rational, logical conclusion. And I remember reading in one of your reports that that's what you wanted to do. You said, you know, I want nothing more than to be rational and take up the rational course with this information. And you are so doing that. It's just so inspirational. And I so related to your last report that I feel sort of so happy to be here talking to you about it. And what is really exciting is that now with these webinars, not just our members can share in your journey, but everyone can share and learn from all our journeys. And I mean, I've been so fortunate to be so close to Jeremy and be a founding member of the WTM. And like, it's like I've had a webinar like this every day of my adult life, him explaining the world. And so I can't not be inspired to try and embrace the transformed state as best I can, because I know that is the path forward for humans and it is what solves all the suffering on the world in on the planet. So I thought, I'm not sure if this would work for you, but I just thought I'd talk briefly about why I related so much to what you had to say, and why I thought it was just so incredibly special and clear, and as you said, instructive, just so helpful, and just read a little bit out from it if that would work for you.
Yes, sure.
Okay. It's so nice to see your face and meet you. Okay, so yeah, as Jeremy read out from your report, it is bottoming out on resignation that you've found so powerful and unlocking to access how the transformed state works. And as you described it, it's a breakthrough realization, and it is. Because in a sort of a simple sentence, I feel that once we accept we are resigned, we're effectively free of the human condition. It's as simple as that, because from there, the transformed state is a very natural and simple process. And what Jeremy's identified in resignation and explained so extraordinarily, it understands us so completely. It loves us so completely. We feel totally understood from that point, that it breaks our denial, it smashes our denial, and breaks our fear of the human condition. And that has to happen for us to be able to access the truth of what's being said, because we're so afraid that it's like a block. And for me, resignation, understanding resignation, just smashed that block, and I could access the full defense of my upset state. And so I just thought that was so brilliant in your report. And from there, if we can hear the defense of our upset, we can actually see our own human condition. We can come out of denial and delusion, and we can see our alienation and deal with it, and we can actually see what's going on and what has been going on for the first time. And we can be honest, as you say, we can actually be honest about our upset, and it's not a problem. It's absolutely fine, because we're defended. And we can see why we had to live in the cave, cringing in fear and pretending that we weren't afraid. And the first thing you want to do is just run out of that cave, because you can now. And you just want to join that incredible journey of freedom that's on, that's happening. And you just want to make sure that everyone else can join that journey too. And that's what was evidenced in your writing. It was just so special. As you said, you know, and Jeremy's read, just this knowledge is what turns everything around. And I feel great joy in being able to bottom out on my resignation. Resignation is a fantastic truth that, in order to be validated, required explaining the human condition, and which then underlies and underpins the proof of our goodness. Yeah, because you can see that great joy that you're feeling is because you can see how you are saved. You can see how you are saved, and therefore the world is saved. And that, instead of it being so confronting, because we were previously undefended, which is all in Chapter 8. I mean, you can't hardly open Chapter 8 and not be just devastatedly confronting with how truthful and honest the description is of our world. But with the defence, wrapped in the defence, you can. It's just not a problem. And I just feel that you're feeling that so deeply and connecting to that. And from there, once you're a defended human, your mindset changes from the previously defensive mindset to a defended mindset. And so instead of sort of feeling under attack constantly and being on guard and being defensive, sort of like a mad dog sort of that's been abused, you can actually feel secure about being upset. You can actually feel secure for the first time in your life, and you can feel safe, and you can feel calm. And that's the transformation. And it's an immediate transformation, and it's that stark because it's that different. And your old ways of coping, which is so fantastic about what you're seeing, it's all just naturally falling out before your eyes. Your old ways of coping just become transparent, so transparent that they just become redundant, because you know you don't need them anymore. You don't have to live like that anymore. And everything is just instantly simple and clear, and the path forward is just very clear. I'd just like to read a little bit more from your report. And this is such an incredible, amazing line. How could we possibly admit that we are schizophrenic, you know, alienated, messed up, without the defense of the human condition? Now with the defense, no wonder I'm finding it hard to read, I haven't got my glasses on. Now with the defense and the understanding of how it all fits together, and with it, the solution to it, it's not confronting at all, but understandable. And that's just, it is, it's not confronting at all, but understandable. Through accepting resignation and staying true to that, we can be free of our schizophrenia. We can be free, and we as you say, we no longer have to act that out now. And then you really sort of talk about that sort of block and undoing that block. The realization of the breakthrough point that resignation in makes it possible to let go of all the other strategies of trying to cope with life. That's that transparency. You can just let it go. We don't need to be anything else. We don't need to do anything else than make sure that what we do is heed the truth that we are resigned and try to do justice to this truth. Because this truth is not fearful. It is what explains us and the reason for why we are good instead of bad. And with that, all else neurotic just goes, because we now have a sound base of knowledge to rely on that. To rely on that dignifies and explains us and enables us to be honest with ourselves. And that is the rapidly transforming effect. That's what happens to you when you're no longer sort of madly driven to prove you're good because you know you're good. What you're driven by is wanting to share this information, wanting to share the defense of our upset, wanting to share the power of being able to relax in that and access the truth and see how in that instance all your suffering is solved, so therefore the world is. And this is the life force that awakens in you that Jeremy just so beautifully describes in Freedom. And if you've got that paragraph, James, put up, that'd be just great, because it couldn't be more beautifully expressed. So this is paragraph 1167 in Freedom. So from being a human condition oppressed and depressed, alienated person, all humans can now be transformed into redeemed, liberated from the human condition, exhilarated, ecstatic, enthralled with existence, empowered, world-transforming life forces. This exhilarated, ecstatic, enthralled with existence aspect of the life in life force is the life in life force, while the empowered, world-transforming aspect is the force in life force. So life force covers both the personal benefit and the benefit to the world in one word. From being human condition afflicted, Plato's cave dwelling, effectively dead humans, we become transformed life forces. That is the difference the arrival of understanding of the human condition makes to the human race. And I just, you know, that is what is here, and that is what is growing, and that is what is coming to the world. But in this pioneering stage, that's what's so brilliant about what you've written, I think. You've really seen that it's tricky. It's tricky to access the defense because we live in such fear of the human condition. It blocks us from actually hearing. It's the deaf effect. We can't actually hear what's being said. So in this pioneering stage, I mean, once everybody's living this way, it is the Joel effect. It will sweep the world. But while we're still growing and developing this in people, it is a little bit tricky, and rightly so, because we have been so afraid that going near the human condition is going to confirm our worst fear that we are evil and bad. And that's why resignation is such a powerful access point, as you've described, because to have that, the most deeply traumatic personal event in your whole life, articulated and described so compassionately and so completely that you can sort of just, you know, you're understood, you know, you're safe, you know, humans can be free again, and you know, the human condition solved. And like Jeremy describes it, resignation is the most important psychological event of our life. And yet, as Jeremy's just discussed, it's not even acknowledged, honestly, or talked about. So, and that's what you talk about. The in understanding resignation, it validates our goodness, as you so beautifully articulate. So I'd just like to read a little bit more from your report. Since we now have a scientifically psychological established phenomena of resignation, I'm jumping through a few bit here, we can accept being resigned because that was only associations to being good. Resignation, as explained in the context of human condition, is plainly shown as the ultimate evidence of our goodness, despite the experience of ourselves as bad. So we should accept ourselves as resigned. And in fact, the fact that we can accept ourselves as resigned instead of destructive is the whole thing, I think. Absolutely. Just 100% agree with you. Finally, we can accept ourselves without accepting that we are bad. And thus we need only to realise the massive positive of resignation instead of being adverse to it. And then, you know, once our goodness is validated, once we can truly in our heart and mind know that our upset is defended and it's absolutely fine and it's part of the human journey and it just had to be that way, we're no longer confronted, as you say, and we can access the full truth of humans, the full defence, and all the wonders of the transformed state come into your life and into the world. And this is just a little, James, if you could put that up, just a compilation from paragraphs 1166 and 1172 that describe the wonders of the transformed state. The wonders of the transformed state, the excitement and relief of being effectively free of the human condition, the joy and happiness of being liberated from the burden of our insecurities and self-preoccupations, the awesome meaning and power of finally being aligned with the truth and participating in the magic true world. That adventure that you talk about in another one of your reports, you say we're on this new adventure and it includes everything but our upset. It's just fantastic. The wonderful empathy and quality of goodness and fellowship that understanding of the human condition now allows us to feel for our fellow humans. The freedom now to effectively focus on repairing the world. Above all, the radiant aliveness from the optimism that comes with knowing our species' march through hell has finally ended and that a human condition free world is coming. Unlike religion, there is no deity involved or deference to any one personality. In fact, there is no worship of any kind. And best of all, there is no guilt because guilt has been eliminated forever. So that was sort of what I intuitively sort of felt and after reading your report and wanted to sort of talk about. And so I've got other things I'd love to say, but I just thought I'd stop there and see if you'd like to talk about anything or if anyone else out there would like to talk about anything and to discuss anything. Or...
Yeah, Ma, thank you for talking about my letters and all of that in such positive tones. And it was, I agree with all you're saying about resignation. And I think that the main thing for me is that I have seen that it actually is a positive with resignation. And that, yeah, and that such we can actually almost as rely on that knowledge for the management for the management of life and our days and to be able to support the VTM more and to begin there is. Have that shift is I think that's to not be averse towards resignation but be see that it's a positive instead and that's the potential I think a potential
everything unravels from there everything the path from there is very clear and natural and beautiful and I'm not sure if Tony would like to say anything now or There's a note.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yep. Yes.
How are you, Olaf?
Hi.
Mate, I don't know where to begin, but Annie showed me, obviously, I've read what you've written here, and I just think it's so exciting because it's especially anyway. I just wanted to talk about two things you wrote in here, which are just really key for me anyway. Which is in your last paragraph, you actually wrote here: we're not being able to know that one is resigned and thinking one is bad due to one's destructive behaviour. One not accept oneself. I mean, that's just such a crucial point because it's so hard. You know, when you're suffering from the human condition and resignation, to actually accept, to be able to live with yourself, because there's so much torment. I mean, it's a horrible place that you know inside your own head when you can't, as you write here, when you can't accept yourself. And that, when Jeremy, someone said once, you just couldn't invent a worse torture than that, which is what you know, resignation is for humans. But it just sort of shows how incredibly brave we are to be able to live through that, and you know, to get to this point in the human journey where finally we can leave that behind, which goes to your next point that I highlighted here, which you've written: finally we can accept ourselves without accepting that we're bad, and thus we only need to realise the massive positive of resignation instead of being averse to it. When we do this, we can finally live a sound life because we have a safe way to accept the truth about ourselves, and we can live with that. And that point there is what you've done there is the honesty, being able to get that honesty up about our resigned state equates to incredible relief, which gets you out of that torment, you know, the tormented state that you've mentioned there, you know. And it's about the whole thing about the whole transformed state and the truth finally being available to us is that it's not about trying to be something you're not. It's just about accepting who you are. And to be able to do that, the relief that comes with that is what, you know, is incredible. And so, you know, but in my mind, there's sort of two parts to the whole process that you've articulated: the part one, which is actually that relief and recognizing resignation, and through the truth of the information, being able to live with that resignation and put it to one side effectively and not have to be, you know, consumed by it anymore. But part two of this journey is when you actually see what it can do for humanity. So it's not just a thing about, you know, you start off with relief for yourself. It's a bit like, I mean, Jeremy's got much better analogies than me, but I always sort of think of it like being in this, you know, like living in a forest. I mean, impenetrable. You just can't get through this forest, but in the middle of the forest there's a path, which is the thing we all know intuitively when we're young, before we resign, is the way to live, which is our sort of selfless moral, you know, instincts, if you like. So there's that path there, but we live in this sort of in this forest and impenetrable jungle, and we every time we sort of try and get toward, you know, and all of our lives are devoted to getting onto this path, and you sort of get there, and when you get there, there's this massive block. It won't let you go anywhere but that huge block is actually ourselves and our torment and our wrestling with that, and we can't move this thing that's in front of us, which is our own, which is a result of resignation, which is our own selfishness and our own appearance that we're bad and not good. But when we actually accept the resignation, that big obstruction just evaporates. And then you can see the path straight ahead out of the forest. And not only that, you can see where all the unresigned minds have lived that before us that have known this truth and the real truth about humans and the potential, everything that goes with that. But the path very quickly opens up into this huge expanse, and it's basically just this endless horizon of human condition free, you know, just amazing. I always kick myself because I don't think I will ever do this justice to how the world is going to be, but it's just an open, free, place with no more torment, no more walking around blindly in the jungle, no more trying to get, you know, trying to get on this path. When, and as Annie just wrote out there, the wonders of the transformed state, my favorite in there is the awesome meaning and power of finally being aligned with the truth and participating in the magic new world. Because we've always wanted to be aligned with the truth. We have, there is this truth of that Jeremy's explained of, you know, negative entropy or unconditional selflessness that sort of that drives everything in the world. And we know that we're not in tune with that when we're resigned. That's what we're fighting all the time. We're trying to prove that we're good and not bad. But to be able to actually be all of a sudden aligned with that truth, the fight stops. And the fight for everyone stops, you know, and the fight for the world stops. And we can sort of finally be at peace. You know, we can, like, heaven is on earth. We just have to get around ourselves first to see it. But anyway, mate, I the only one thing I disagree with that you've written in here is I haven't yet been transformed. I disagree with that because I think you're on the right track, and you're certainly through stage one as far as I'm concerned anyway. So it's and it's just terrific to see you anyway after reading everything.
Yeah, the same. Thank you, Tony. What you said about the neg entropy theme of life and then resignation in contrast to that, I can see very clearly that it's, as you said, it's we can't live in alignment with the true nature of the world as we are assigned. But when I met this information, I could see that contradiction, but yet I couldn't bridge it immediately. Of course, we can't. And then we are left with just a recognition of this contradiction, I'd say. And perhaps their resignation is very helpful to something which you can bottom out on and take comfort in, that I can't bridge this because I am resigned and it's nothing wrong with that. And I can, instead of trying to bridge this desperately, I can just be myself as a resigned who are supporting the VTM, perhaps. I think about it, and that's a comfort while the contradiction between these two are perhaps quite painful in the beginning.
That contradiction you speak of, Olof, is what the transformed state does bridge. It is reconcilable because you actually put down your contradictions, your contradicted self. You put down your upset self, and you can live in alignment with integrative meaning and that force on earth. It's like the paradigm shift drawing. That's what I keep in my mind all the time, and that's where I go to every time I start feeling and thinking about anything, because you are connected to the story of humanity, and in that there is no contradiction, because as you're discovering, resignation was a necessary part of the human journey, immensely heroic part. But then we're left with all this damage and all this these egocentricities and anger and all our alienation. But we can actually just put that down and move forward as and that is the transformation. You don't take that with you, and that bridges the contradiction. It's like you live in that paradigm shift drawing. It's like you're part of it. It's like it's running through your blood and you're running through its blood. It's the big picture that Jonathan spoke about in the last webinar, which he worked out, you be mindful of the big picture and you don't engage or be mindful of the mess, the necessary and understandable mess that in your life and in humanity's life that we've had to make to get to this point. And when you're in that big macro picture, you're defended, you're completely defended, you're completely open to the truth. And, you know, you can feel, you can actually feel integrative meaning in you, in the world. You can see it. You can see the power of that force, and you can see the whole horror and the agony of the journey. But you can see how incredibly heroic and magnificent your upset is as a price of searching for knowledge. And you can reconcile all the polarities of life and yourself. You can bridge that contradiction. And the greatest thing I feel, which is the best feeling ever, is that you're no longer confronted by innocence. You can actually recognise that there are two types of humans. There is the resigned human, and then there's a necessarily very rare unresigned humans. And that you no longer have to be criticised by that, by the innocence of children, the innocence of nature, the innocence of the unresigned mind. And it just smashes all that away, and you just feel connected to all humans. It's like Jeremy, when he was designing the cover of Freedom, he did this initial drawing with Freedom with the sun. It was just a black and white drawing, and all humans were holding hands underneath it, just in a line, and we were all together and we were all moving forward. And that's what's in you, that's what you feel, that oneness, that completeness, that journey out of hell into freedom. And it's like Jeremy said in the previous webinar, freedom is the war cry humans will naturally ultimately cry out when they know they're free. And as Professor Prosen wrote in his introduction, you know, all that is standing between sort of the extinction of the human race is freedom. All that stands between the human race and extinction is freedom. And that's another thing Jonathan saw. He said, this is it. In that moving, he was so moved and so connected to how this reconciles everything, that how it does bridge that contradiction, that he just said, this is it, this is it. And that is the excitement that runs through you. Like Tony Mile texted me yesterday and said, Annie, I'm so excited about coming to the webinar and meeting Olof and being able to talk to him. It's like being five on Christmas Eve, you know. I mean, and you realise that your job as a resigned human is to communicate that it's safe, that this is safe, that we are defended and we can live with this. We don't have to be afraid of the human condition anymore. That's our job as a resigned human. And that's what we want to talk about. We want to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk about the transformed state so people can realise that it is safe and that we can confront the human condition. And we have this amazing tool, the transformed state, as a way of coping with that. And not just coping, but absolutely flourishing. And it is like being the religious sort of terms at being reborn, because you do have access to all that beautiful world that you once had to leave and lived in denial of. And instead of sort of deferring to a representation of soul or the ideals, you're deferring to the biological understanding of ideals. And that's the great difference between this and a religion, because yes, there's a certain degree of artificiality, but there is no dishonesty and absolutely no delusion. And you can just... And you can just live in support of this legitimately and beautifully, and it fulfills you, and it fulfills the human journey, and it stops the human suffering. I guess the only thing else I'd like to talk to you about or tell you about is that how important on that journey is our fellowship and our ability to talk to each other and look after each other. And I mean, you and Jonathan have done so well, just, and so many others have, just working your way through in Canada or Sweden, and here we are in Australia. It's just sensational. It's so exciting that, you know, WTM is global now. It's international. Now with these webinars, people will have so much more access to the fellowship and wonder of just watching Jeremy, that unresigned mind, full of soul and full of life, explain human life to you. And but in Sydney, in the World Transformation Centre, the first one we have, we have meetings. We have weekly meetings. We have two weekly meetings. We have Freedom Study, which reads freedom and discusses and talks about the contents of freedom. And then we have another meeting each week, which we call Transformation Study, which is getting together and talking about our experiences with the transformed state and how we can best communicate that and take that to the world as our job as resigned humans. And that's our product, and that's what we want to take to the world. And we use just at this point in time, we just have a simple conferencing system where people can ring in on their way home from work, or when they're going for a walk or whatever they're doing, and come together. And it's sort of like the beginnings of Transformation Radio or Transformation TV. And we aren't set up internationally to be able to do it to the whole world, but that will come. And but that's the amazing fellowship and wonder and feeding the new world. You're living in the new world. You're living the real way. And so soon people will set up their own world transformation centres. You know, I mean, you might like to do that all off, you know, in Scandinavia, collect all the people there and start getting together and talking about this. And that as someone who has had such privilege of being so close to Jeremy and being a founding member of the WTM, you know, we are just so lucky, too lucky to even begin to describe, to have that closeness to Jeremy's unresigned mind and the closeness that we have together. And and now with the Freedom webinars, with Freedom, that Jeremy's got his definitive description and articulation of the whole problem and the whole solution all in one beautiful book. And that soon that there will be WTM centres all over the world. You can have the fortune of what we've had all together, and we can all share in this extraordinary journey. And as it says on our website, you know, the book of life, the book of understanding, where we can wipe every tear from every eye and finally bring peace to the planet. Anyway, that's really all I wanted to say to you, and just tell you how special it is to have your involvement and participation. And I just can't encourage you enough, and also for other people to, you know, get involved, become a member, get into these webinars, send in your questions. Let's go, let's do it, you know. It's on, and you don't want to miss out.
Okay, thank you, Andy. It was nice to talk to you, and Tony too.
That was spellbinding. That was just spellbinding. That was just beautiful. So full of the new world. that was just beautiful from the three of you. It was just lovely. It was just a privilege. I love to meet you and to hear your sincere voice and feelings coming through. It's just lovely. As Annie said, we can only encourage you, and we just wish that we could all be linked up, and it'll come soon, and then we can help, because it's a lonely journey, especially at this pioneer stage, and your courage and where you've been on your own and what you've done, and Jonathan's is really difficult out there. It is very lonely, and knowing about this, and you talk to people about it, but as soon as people are so intuitive, you start talking about the human condition, even from a remote distance, they sort of intuitively know where you're going and don't want to engage. And so And you said, look, this is safe. Honestly, this is really wonderful. And they're skeptical, and it's this is very hard to get this going. So it takes great courage. And You and Jonathan have exhibited extraordinary courage, because we know, we've had, as Zanny said, the benefit of each other and this wonderful group of people. And Zanny said each week that we're having freedom study groups and transformation meetings and it'd be wonderful if we could get you somehow until we can get centres going over there. We've got people from Denmark and other people from Sweden interested, and maybe, as Annie said, that we can get a centre there. But it'd be good if we could figure out a way to, with this technology today, which is to try and get everybody to be able to share this new world, which is going to be so exciting. I'm just gobsmacked with what Annie said and how beautiful she said it, and Tony Mile, it was just lovely. I just haven't got anything to add to that. Just the biggest hugs in the world to you, Olof, we'll be launching Freedom next year, and hopefully we'll be able to get it out there and get more and more people involved, and hopefully word of mouth will start spreading about these webinars, and more people will come listening to them and come and watch them on the recordings on our website and so forth. And you better jump on one of your Viking vessels and come out and visit us. We'd love to see you. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to play Dancing in the Street by Martha and the Vandals. This is some really good music, and it talks about it's a really an anthem to the new world. So I did this once before. I played Jerry Lee Lewis and got hit one of his songs and got Neil out here, because Neil can dance like you wouldn't believe. And that we've got us all a bit embarrassed. But Neil's about 6'8", but gosh, he can dance. And
you want to come up here, Neil? Come up here.
So just to end this webinar and to wish everyone out there who's listening all the love in the world, and I just want to listen to the words of this, and we'll sign off with that. So thank you very much, everyone, and especially for those who have participated in coming on camera. And we'll let you know shortly when the next webinar is. So here's Martha and the Vandals with Dancing in the Street, which has got to be happening the whole world over.